Welcome to Nos Audientes. This is the third installment, I guess that's what we're calling it. Are we calling it third?
I think we're calling it fourth, right?
Oh, fourth.
We said we're calling the last one the third.
Yeah, so this is the fourth installment of Nos Audientes. We're rolling along here. It's pretty amazing. I'm Jeremiah O'Shan. I'm with Aaron Campo. Another tie. I think maybe we're probably a little more, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that tie. On one hand, it was a nice result to get a point on the road. But on the other hand, we had a lead that we had two leads and we blew two leads. And, you know, you never like to blow leads. So.
No, this is starting to feel like watching Aston Villa, and that's not good.
Yeah, I don't think I want to be. I don't think. And knowing what I know of where their season's gone, I don't think that's where we want to be comparing the Sounders.
No,
season.
It's really not. No.
So there were some encouraging things. We scored twice. That's obviously a good thing. The fact that those two goals came off of the feet of Brad Evans and the head of O'Brien White should be at least somewhat encouraging, since those are not necessarily those are guys that we would like to see scoring. And especially in the case of O'Brien White, I think it buys him a little bit more time in terms of the patience that he's going to be shown. Brad Evans, it was a nice goal. We were discussing the fact that there was a lot of things he did right on the goal, and I think you got to give him credit for that goal. But at the same time, it was not necessarily a great game from Brad Evans. I mean, what were your limited impressions of that game?
Yeah, I was watching on a very small TV in a very small hotel room in downtown San Francisco, and I was kind of distracted, as you might imagine. My impressions of the first half, I did not think that the Sounders looked especially good at the start of the game. I don't really think either team looked especially good, but I thought the Sounders were really sloppy. I think that they definitely improved, though, as the first half went along. The second half of that game was one of the more unpleasant halves of soccer I've watched in quite a while from both sides. It was needlessly physical, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the refereeing was just way, way, way too loose, especially towards the end of the first half when things started getting a little bit pushy and shovey out there, and both teams saw that they could get away with that, and it just made for a really nasty, unpleasant second half of soccer, and I was, as much as I would have liked 3 points, I was kind of glad when the whistle blew.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was a game that after the first half, I was really excited, and it was one of those things where you just felt very positive about everything. I don't know that we dominated the game, but we certainly looked strong. We, you know, those two goals were the thing that was actually really impressive. I thought about both the goals wasn't so much the finishing, but what set them up, and just like how much skill went into both setups. You had Mauro Rosales sending in a wonderful cross after, you know, working himself down to the baseline and finding Brad Evans streaking right towards the goal. And then the other goal is, you know, you're not going to see a lot of more impressive individual efforts than what Steve Zakuani did on the left wing to set up the O'Brien White goal. And, you know, it's pretty easy to get excited when you're scoring those kind of goals. But then the second half was just, I just felt like turnover after turnover in the midfield. And I'm not going to say that the Sounders didn't deserve a point in that game, because I think they could have very easily pulled out all three. But, you know, it's a point is probably fair.
Yeah, I think it was one of those games where if San Jose had taken all 3 points, that wouldn't have felt like the game got away from the Sounders. If, you know, I thought the draw was fair for both sides, and I think if the Sounders had taken 3 points, it wouldn't have necessarily felt unfair for San Jose. It was, you know, it was, I think, a good game in the first half, a terrible game in the second half, and it was kind of equally contested by both teams. I'm really getting tired of ridiculously amazing goals being scored against the Sounders. But on the other hand, there were a couple of other opportunities that San Jose had that they probably should have gotten something out of that they didn't. So it wasn't discouraging at all. I mean, you're going to have games like that. It was definitely less frustrating than the Houston game, I think. And, you know, a point was fine. And I'd rather forget about that game, because it kind of sucked.
And, you know, speaking of all these kind of wonder goals that have been plaguing the Sounders, you know, we now have 4 games the Sounders have played. In every game, there's been a goal from, you know, at least the edge of the penalty area, if not farther out. And you know, the Kari Stevenson goal in this one was probably the peak of him, where he's, I don't know, 35 yards out, and he just fires off a laser into the top right, you know, into the far post, inside the far post. And it's, you know, it's like, what do you got to do? On some level, certainly it's frustrating that no one closed down on him, but the guy was shooting it from 35 yards out.
Right, yeah. I mean, you can maybe get upset with Alonso for giving the ball away like he did. I think it was Alonso that gave the ball away in that situation. But you know, Ozzie Alonso is not going to do that all that often, and that's not. I mean, it's not a great area to give the ball away, but it's not like giving the ball away at the edge of the box. I mean, it was solidly in the midfield, and yeah, he was in space. But I mean, the Sounders were kind of breaking to counter at that point in time, and I mean, he took what, like one or two touches?
I mean, it was a turnover right around midfield. He takes about two touches. Jeff Park is basically backpedaling. He gave him probably too much. I mean, there's about 6 yards of space between him and the next closest defender, which is too much space no matter what. But yeah, I mean, he basically took one or two touches and then he just let it rip.
And I think the other thing too is if, you know, if he closes down on him and he finds a way to put the ball into space and like Wondolowski runs onto it or something and scores, then I think then maybe you're annoyed at Park for not staying with what you would think would be the more dangerous player.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be pretty easy to second guess him if he were to close down on him and open up a lane for a run, and then you know, it's like, let him shoot if he wants to shoot. You know, how many times do you hear people
Right.
say, if he wants to shoot from there, let him shoot? I mean, I would say of all the long goals that the Sounders gave up, that was probably the most frustrating from a perspective of it was the most unbelievable goal, but it was the least frustrating in the sense that, as even though there was a mistake that led up to it was not nearly a mistake on the level that led up to the other kind of wonder goals that the Sounders have been giving up.
No, I mean, it was the kind of mistake that is generally just kind of annoying, and it turned out to basically, I guess, cost the Sounders 2 points. But I mean, San Jose was having a decent amount of luck in attacking in the second half, and you know, maybe if they're still pushing for an equalizer, it turns out differently. You never know. I can't be. I was certainly upset after the goal was scored, but in retrospect, I can't be upset about it because I mean,
Yeah.
that's a fantastic goal, and I'm gl
It
like
is.
honestly, I'm glad that we're seeing goals like that in MLS because that
Well,
was.
that's a good point. Yeah,
Yeah, I
that
wish,
was a
you know, against other teams, but
Yeah, it would be nice if they could spread those out a little bit more instead of it seems like every week the Sounders, I guess maybe not the Houston week, but every week the Sounders have had a goal of the week candidate scored against them, which is definitely getting a little old.
yeah, and even in the Houston game, I mean, what led to the goal was a free kick from about the same distance that
Good
hit the
point.
bar. So,
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not a goal of the week candidate because it was just a rebound, but an excellent effort from the other side.
Speaking about that game again, there was a play at the end where the Earthquakes had a free kick from just outside the penalty area, and as our one of our wonderful readers was so pleasantly pointing out, was there was quite a scrum going on in the box, and you had a pretty clear example of Leo Gonzalez probably dragging down Chris Wondolowski. Although the thing that makes it funny is that Chris Wondolowski wasn't dragged down as much as he allowed himself to go down after the ball was dead. So it was like he kind of wanted to have his cake and eat it too. He wanted to get fouled, but he didn't want to give up on the play. I'm just curious what your take on the scrum on free kicks is. I mean, do you think that there needs to be more cracking down on it, or do you think on some level it's like you just let it go? I mean,
I think it's the same kind of thing where, you know, how they say in the other football, you can call holding on every play if you want to. I mean, a referee could legitimately probably award a penalty on every single corner or close range free kick. I mean, I think that that's especially true in MLS. There's a lot of physical play that people get away with down there. I think sometimes it definitely goes a little too far, and you know, something that should be an absolute cut and dried penalty turns out not to be just because everything is let go. I don't think that this was one of those situations. I think you're right. I think that Wondolowski went down a little easily and in very favorable circumstances for San Jose's chances of scoring a goal in that situation. He and Leo were getting at each other pretty good in that game, I think.
They certainly didn't seem very happy with each other at the end of the game.
No, they didn't. And, you know, it was funny because, I mean, watching that game in the Bay Area, the announcers after the game were just getting all over Leo for not shaking Wondolowski's hand. And it was like, you know, Chris, he might be saying some really awful things while he's sticking his hand out there. Like, you know, well, I mean,
are you suggesting that players aren't always honest with the
right? That maybe they recognize that they're on television and I don't know. And you know what? And maybe not. Maybe Leo is the jerk in that situation. I don't know. I don't care.
I don't. I just thought it was a funny little. It was just funny exchange because, you know, you had a play. It was just very funny because on one hand, Wondolowski did not go down on, like, Leo didn't drag him down because Wondolowski wanted to go after the ball, which is the right thing to do. I mean, I think, but then he kind of, after the ball was already past him, he kind of goes down like, oh.
Right. I mean, and it's not like that's an uncommon sight either.
No, it's not. But it was a funny little exchange. But
it was, yeah.
Speaking of things that are a little bit more indicative of things going forward, again, we have this situation in the midfield, which does not appear to be working itself out to any kind of long-term solution, or maybe it is a long-term solution, and we just refuse to believe it is, but it doesn't seem to be any clearer, the pecking order in the midfield now. I mean, it on some level, it looks like it's probably Brad Evans starting in the middle, but I don't know if that's really fair to assume. I would say Freeburg maybe is the. Maybe Rosales is the starting right mid. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean, who do you think are? Let's put ourselves in Siggy's mind and try to play how we think he's thinking. I mean, who do you think the starters in the midfield are? Obviously, we agree Zach Wani and Alonso, but then who are the other two?
I don't want to read too much into Rosales because I think that Freddie being out definitely changes things, maybe changes the emphasis at other positions because you don't have him being Freddie in the middle. But I think at the same time, you know, Rosales made the most of the opportunity he had to start and had a fantastic game until he kind of faded towards the end. But, you know, he's gonna keep building fitness. And I definitely think it's reasonable to think Ziggy would be swayed by that. He's going to have another game, most likely, I believe, with Freddie probably still being out for the Chicago game, I think is the latest, correct?
Yeah, apparently he came to practice in a sling today. So to me, that tells, if you're in a sling, it probably doesn't mean that you're playing a few days from now.
Yeah, the odds are definitely going to be against you. But I mean, if he has the same kind of game, you know, against Chicago that he did against San Jose, I think it's reasonable to expect he's up there in the pecking order. I think that if that's the case, and if he's the starting right mid, the fact that Siggy played Freeburg despite his having the flu probably gives you reason to believe that he's maybe also up there in the pecking order. But it's not like there's a history of Ziggy not loving Brad Evans. So, I mean, it's tough to say, but I think it's reasonable to expect those three to be the ones that are kind of up there with Alvaro maybe down at the bottom.
Yeah, and I think you and I probably share the frustrations because I think we both like a lot of what we see about Alvaro, but it just doesn't look like – it's hard to make an argument that he is a top – you know, that he's a first choice selection right now when Siggy is choosing a guy with a flu over him. And I don't think that Flacco played bad on Saturday. I don't know what your impressions were, but I actually thought he looked reasonably, you know, I thought he was probably an upgrade over Freeburg.
Over near dead Freeburg.
Yeah. I mean, and cause I thought Freeburg looked pretty dead. You know, I mean, he helped out on the first goal. But he didn't. I thought that was easily his most. And granted, in hindsight, this all makes sense. But at the time, I thought it was easily his most inactive game. You know, he wasn't flying around the way that he has been. He wasn't getting a lot of touches. He wasn't. You know, it was just not the. He wasn't particularly good. And I think I was a little surprised that there were people that were upset when he was pulled because he looked like he was just really. He was not fit, and obviously in hindsight we find out that he wasn't fit, but it does seem to say something that Siggy would prefer to play a guy with the flu over Flacco. right now.
Yeah, it really does. And I think at this point, maybe there's something else going on that, you know, that we don't know about, because that's just, that seems needlessly reckless to me. I mean, I like Eric Freeburg too. I like him a lot. So I understand, you know, Siggy's affection for him, but I don't even move to the living room when I have the flu, you know, and I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not getting paid a lot of money, but I mean, come on, like that's seems kind of crazy to start a guy who has a respiratory illness over a perfectly healthy designated player sitting on the bench. And that just leads me to believe that there's something we don't know and that we're probably not going to know about the way Siggy feels about Alvaro Fernandez. And I think that that's a shame, because I think, you know, a lot of people have been critical and said that he hasn't played like a DP, and he hasn't played, you know, it's hard for him to live up to his potential and to earn his money when he hasn't gotten a consistent run of games. I mean, I, you know, last year, I mean, it seems like a million years ago, but he did not get regular starting time in MLS. He played in a lot of cup competitions, but I really don't remember him getting like a consistent stretch of games to show what he could do. And this year he got what, two at the very start of the season. I mean, you know, of course he hasn't lived up to DP status. He hasn't gotten a chance to. And I think that that's the same thing that's most frustrating to me. I mean, I'm willing to accept maybe that he is not as good a player as I think he is. And I think he can be. I'm not saying that that's, you know, that that's impossible. I'm just saying we haven't seen nearly enough to know that for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. It's you kind of almost have to keep in mind that this is a player who, I don't know this for sure, but I feel pretty confident in saying I don't think he's ever gone 70 minutes in two games in a row.
Yeah,
I don't think, let alone, I know he hasn't gone, I don't know that he's gone 90 minutes at any point in his Sounders career, but he definitely hasn't played most of a game two games in a row. And that's saying it's like weird. It's like one of those chicken and egg things where is he not getting to play 70 minutes in a row because he's not doing enough in training, or is he not really performing because he's not really being given a chance?
Yeah. And it's sort of kind of what we were led to believe last year was he wasn't getting, you know, a full 90 minutes or maybe a full run of games because he'd had a full season, you know, for club, and then World Cup where he didn't start every game, but I think he played in every game, you know, during
he might have. Yeah. He seemed like he was getting a free, I mean, he played. Yeah. He definitely played.
Right. And so, you know, and then he comes here and, you know, I'm willing to believe maybe he needed a little bit of a breather. That's fine, especially as a midfield player. I mean, we saw the same kind of thing with Kufo, but he eventually worked himself into the regular rotation and as a starter, you know, at that forward spot. But, you know, forwards don't run as much as midfielders. So I was willing to accept that, as frustrating as it was. Well, he's had a full off season now. And, you know, maybe what we're not seeing is that he just doesn't work hard in practice, but that doesn't really seem to mesh with a guy who has the bona fides that he does.
Yeah, and you know, this is pretty anecdotal, and I don't know what we can really make of it, but I was at practice on Monday, and they ended up basically giving him a regen day, and so by the time we got to practice, they weren't even really training as much as they were playing a game, which was an instructive game, but it was a game nonetheless, and so then they ended up letting him go pretty early that day, and a lot of players were sticking around and goofing off and, you know, taking penalties and doing things that, you know, players do when they're, and they actually were, it was actually encouraging to see that they were all in good spirits and that they seemed to not be trying to get out of there as fast as they could, which I certainly think is a good indicator. That being said, Alvaro was just kind of running laps on his own, and he was running laps, you know, for a good half hour after they'd kind of called practice off. And I'm starting, it just kind of makes me wonder if maybe they've basically just told him that, look, you're not in the kind of shape we need you to be in. We need you to be in better shape. And it was, you know, and I don't know what to, these are all seemingly unconnected things, but now I'm starting to maybe draw some dots here. But, you know, Mauro Rosales was saying that the biggest difference between MLS and the leagues that he's played in, and keep in mind this is a guy who's played for River Plate and for Ajax, you know, he basically said that he's not used to guys going basically full, going hard all 90 minutes. And so it was a little bit of a shock to his system to realize that he couldn't kind of save a little, because if he was saving something, then he wasn't being able to compete right then. And, right. and I almost wonder if there's, maybe that is something that's a little different about MLS, is that it's not that the guys are obviously so much more skilled, because we know that they aren't, but maybe they are just maybe a little more, they're a different kind of fitness.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely a reasonable assumption to make. And I also think one of the things that we heard about the U.S. national team going into the World Cup was, oh, you know, this is one of the fittest teams in the world. And I think that that's probably true, because I think that, you know, maybe in countries where the skill level isn't as high as some of the other countries that, you know, they're competing against, it's a little more important to get that extra match fitness. And you can maybe draw the conclusion that, you know, maybe there's more emphasis put on conditioning in countries that aren't as far along in the development of the skill portion of the game. And MLS is, you know, made up of a lot of American players, and conditioning, if it's important at the very top, it's probably important all the way down through the system, you would imagine. So
yeah, I don't know. It's all kind of idle speculation, but we actually had a chance to talk to Brett Evans, or I had a chance to talk to Brett Evans at practice the other day, and the interview came out pretty good, so we figure we might as well share that here. It's about 5 minutes, and when we come back, we're going to basically talk about the Chicago Fire.
So you went 90, right?
Yeah.
And how was that going 90? It was the first time this year, right?
Yeah, it was the first time in, you know, almost a year or something like that. So, you know, it was good. You know, tired legs towards the end there, but... you know, I think if maybe we were winning that game, maybe they'd take me out and save some legs. But, you know, I think we were pushing, you know, our subs were obviously offensive at that point, so we were pushing for the win, even on the road, which is, you know, positive to see that we weren't just bunkering in, you know,
right,
and bringing in another defensive player. So, but personally, it's good, you know, you get those games under your belt and stay healthy, you know, throughout those 90 minutes, I think is the most important thing.
Did you feel like you were really hitting a wall at some point, or did you feel like...
Absolutely.
Like, what would you just... kind of guessing what
I glanced up at the clock at like 70 72. I was sure that it had to be 80 89 90 or something like that. So you know, I'm not 90 minutes fit yet,
right.
So for me, you know, it goes both ways. You know, you want to go hard for as long as possible, but then you know, you also want to be able to go 90 minutes and push your body, especially when we have 6 7 days of recovery now until our next game. You know, it was important to get the 90 minutes under the belt, you know, mentally for sure. You know, and looking back on it, I think I could have gone a little bit harder. You know, if I had known that I was for sure going 90 minutes, you know, maybe I'd go a little bit harder. But, you know, for me, like I said, it's just, you know, get the 90 minutes under the belt, healthy, you know, get your fitness back here.
But, and it has to be encouraging just being able to, I mean, you obviously weren't causing, you weren't a drag on the team those last 18 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, would you say that you feel at this point that you could get, that you're getting to the point where you can go 90?
Yeah, I think so. I think like I said, that I think that 90 minutes was a boost for me mentally and physically also. So, you know, obviously I still have to be 90 minutes fit to where I'm all out 90 minutes. You know, that's what's going to benefit me the most. It's going to benefit the team the most because, you know, like you said, I hit the wall probably, you know, 70, 75 minutes. So, but for me, getting the 90 minutes in is a boost for sure.
How big was that goal for you? That seems kind of like a Brad Evans goal. I mean, that's the kind of goal that we always...
Yeah,
you know, have, you know, Siggy's always talking about that
late run and stuff
late
like that.
Run and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I spoke with Arlo before the game for an interview as well, and you know, Ziggy and I had talked about it. It's just making those runs at the right time. You know, is really important as well. So, you know, I guess just a, I want to say like a classic, you know, late run in the box finish is, I guess that's what it was. You know, not saying that that's my forte or anything, but you know, it's good to score that type of goal. You know. And just putting the ball in the back of the net is, you know, kind of wipes away all injuries or fears or, you know, anything like that. So it's good.
Was there ever a point in the last year, whatever, that it's been that you starting to doubt that you were going to get to 90 minutes, that you're going to kind of get to this point again, or were you pretty confident all along?
No, I think, you know, this injury has kind of been a mystery to everybody that's been involved with it, you know, from the amount of physicians that have seen my, you know, that had seen my MRI and stuff like that was, you know, it was just something that was really strange from my perspective, from, you know, doctors, trainers, coaches, things like that. So I think everything was, like everybody's been saying since day one, is day by day. So, you know, I think obviously in the back of my mind I was always pushing for 90 minutes fit for sure and going 90 minutes. That was something that never, I don't think, was ever out of the cards or anything. So, you know, I guess answering your question, no, I think I was going to be back for 90 minutes. But there was a point there where it was definitely a question for sure.
And so speaking more about the team, I mean, you guys now have two games in a row where you have, you know, pretty solid performances.
Yeah.
You only have 2 points to show for it. But, I mean, do you feel like that overall you guys are feeling positive about this? I mean, what would you –
Yeah, I mean, you see it here. Everybody's, you know, it's a regen day, and they let us go early, but everybody's still out here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think if heads are down, spirits are down, you'd see everybody's already in their cars by now.
Right.
So, you know, from that standpoint, everybody being out here and, you know, getting these little games in, spirits are high. But, you know, I think the game against Houston was a high-quality game, you know, from our standpoint. The most glaring thing for me was, you know, in the San Jose game was probably, you know, connecting 4 and 5 passes in a row. It's something that we didn't do. You know, bottom line, it just wasn't good enough. So clearances out of the back just weren't good enough. You know, things like that, that if we can tweak those things, you know, I think we would have been much better off in that game for sure, you know, because once the clearances were coming in, everybody was stepping forward, and then the ball was getting shoved right back down in our throats. So, you know, I think it's positive to get a point on the road, but then again, it's a different feeling than Houston. We were happy with the tie, with good spirits, you know, but after that game, 2-2 tie on the road even, we were disappointed with that. So I think that's good for the team to be disappointed in feeling that we should have won that game for sure, but that'll only push us harder to get 3 points this weekend.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time.
Cool.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, well, hopefully you enjoyed that little break with Brad Evans, and certainly some positives, I think, to take away from his performance. That he pointed out, just the fact that this is a guy who literally a year ago was suffering from mystery ailments, and we were being told almost on a weekly basis that he was week to week, and then week to week became, oh, he's having surgery, and then having surgery became, yeah, he's out for the year. So it was, you know, it was good to talk to Brad, and it was nice to see that he was also realistic about his own performance, I think, and that, you know, he recognizes that there were some giveaways in the midfield. And, but moving on to the Chicago Fire, this is still a team, 3 games, I guess they've only played 2 games. I think they've only played 2 games so far. But I would dare say that there's not a team in the league that less is really known about than the Fire. Part of that is because they had a massive overhaul in the offseason. They had something like 90% of their starters' minutes, or maybe 90% of their minutes. That might be oversaying it, but it was a lot. They lost a lot of their minutes from last year, and they brought in a lot of guys that we almost know nothing about. I mean, do you have any kind of first impressions that you are getting? Oh, and that said, they're undefeated through 2 matches.
Yeah, I really don't. This is going to be my first opportunity to actually see them play, you know, a full match. I've seen some highlights and everything, but, you know, they beat a pretty decent Kansas City team. They drew with Dallas, which maybe seemed more impressive at the time than it does now. And they beat the defending MLS Cup champion Colorado Rapids
in the Open Cup.
So, you know, I know about their results, and I know about the fact that they were experimenting with a lot of different looks during the preseason.
They settled on a 3. They're actually playing a 3-5-2.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, it's and they have it's like a very European. The team has a very European feel to it, even if it's not a lot of Europeans per se. Well, there might actually be quite a few Europeans, but they have some skill on that team. They've got a couple Uruguayans that look pretty good for them. Gaston Perari has looked very good, and Marco Papa has been around, but he's another foreign player who is, you know, kind of gives them this feel of being a different team. And Diego Chavez is the guy I was thinking of.
Yeah.
He's been really good. Both him and Perari have both been, they're both Uruguayan if I remember correctly, and they both look really good. In the games that I've seen.
Yeah, I am. I'm really curious to see them, because when I first heard that they were going, you know, experimenting with a 3-5-2, I thought, well, you know, that'll last for a week or two. But I did not know. I will admit to being ignorant of the fact that they had stuck with that, and it seems to have been fairly successful so far this season.
As someone who is much more familiar with the 3-5-2 than I am, I mean, why don't you just share with us a little bit about what that really means? You know, obviously we know that there's three defenders and there's two forwards, but the formation in a 3-5-2 is really much more, it's not that simple. It's not like there's five midfielders, two forwards, and three defenders. It's really there's three center backs and there's two wing backs. That's usually the way it's set up, right?
Right, and you know, I mean, a lot depends with any three at the back formation. It's going to depend on the emphasis that the coach, you know, chooses to place on what those wing backs do. It can be a really very defensive formation, and it can also be a very attacking formation. It's typically not as attacking as say a 3-4-3 would be, but yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting formation to see work, and it's a formation that I kind of fell out of favor, I guess, in the late 90s, early part of the decade, the turn of the century, if you will. But you know, it was used to pretty great success in South America specifically. And you know, Jake had a post on this a while back, and kind of got into the history of the way the formation's been used. But more recently, it's been more of an attacking formation, the wing backs pushing forward a little bit more than you would have seen in the past. And it kind of seems like that's how the Fire are using it, because all the highlights I've seen of them this season, they've been pushing forward pretty well, or they have been trying to get back to cover a very dire looking counterattack.
Yeah, and it sounds like from kind of looking through their records a little bit, it looks like when Marco Papa is available, that they're really, he seems to be the key figure in their 3-5-2. He's basically their center, essentially a more central attacking midfielder. And so when he's available, they've been in a 3-5-2. Apparently they played more of a 4-4-2 in the Open Cup game because he was on international duty. But he's kind of the cog that makes the 3-5-2 work. And it's an interesting experiment. I actually went through, there's a website that's actually a pretty fun little website. If you've never been to it, it's called Football Lineups. And they have a lot of, if you're into formations and you're into kind of some of the more esoteric statistical stuff that goes along with soccer, it's a great site. But one of the things that they do is they'll actually show you the number of, you know, each game they kind of assign a formation to every team. And it's, you know, it's like any formation, there's a certain amount of subjectivity to it. But, you know, you look at what last year, I think there was something like eight games where teams used three-back formations, which was a pretty huge departure from the year before, when there was something like 40 games where 40 lineups that featured three back formations. And then you just go 2 years back, and it was actually a pretty common formation for teams to use. And there was a couple teams that were using it all the time. Like DC United was using primarily a 3-5-2 as recently as 2 years ago. And it's interesting. And I'm curious, do you have a sense of why the 3-5-2 ends up falling out of favor? And you know, the 4-4-2 seems to be really one of these formations that is here to stay.
Well, I think a lot of that, especially in MLS, has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, the 4-4-2 is the most English formation possible. And I think in many senses, the English game is sort of fetishized here. And so I think that one's always kind of going to stick around. I mean, it's the building block. And it's also, you know, it's a flexible formation. It's everyone knows how to play in a 4-4-2. Three at the back formations are always going to, well, I don't want to say always, but I think a lot of the time they'll fall out of favor, because if teams use them with a lot of attacking intent, any time a goal is scored against them, it's going to say, well, if they were playing four at the back like they should be, then this never would have happened. And if they're being used defensively, people are going to start accusing the manager of employing anti-football or whatever. And it's just, it's different, and people like different when it's going well, and when things aren't going well, they focus on the thing that's different as the problem. you know, it's unorthodox in the game today. And I mean, it's cropping up a lot in Italy in the last, especially this year. But you know, it's different, and people are scared of different. And I think that maybe the Fire can get away with it because there were so many changes made, and no one had any real expectations out of them. I mean, I think that they were, you know, widely regarded to be long shots for the playoffs. So, you know, they can maybe afford to experiment a little bit.
Yeah, and I actually think it's neat to see a manager experimenting a little bit, just because we don't see a lot of experimentation going on in MLS, and it's neat to see, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing how that ends up playing out. From a Sounders perspective, I mean, what do you think the big things to look for in terms of how they match up with a, let's assume they're going to be in a 3-5-2?
Well, I think one of the big things that can be taken advantage of, if they're in a 3-5-2, those three central defenders are really sort of primarily put there to counteract two big opposing strikers. And the Sounders don't really have that. I mean, their odds are very good that we're going to kind of see Mauro Rosales in the withdrawn forward role again with O'Brien White up top. And, you know, that's not really what teams tend to use a three at the back formation to counteract. And if that's the case, and a lot of the attack is coming from wide areas, and Chicago is kind of pushing forward with their wing backs, that could actually give the Sounders some opportunity to maybe do a little bit more counterattacking than we tend to see from them at home. You know, I think that if O'Brien White can maybe draw defenders to him, and Rosales can kind of do what we saw from him against San Jose, where he's linking up with the outside midfielders and kind of creating havoc in that sense, then, you know, I think that it could be a pretty successful sort of matchup. On the other hand, you know, Leo Gonzalez had a much, much, much better game against San Jose, and he had a much better game against Houston than we'd saw earlier this season, but I'm still not 100% convinced that he's back to the level he was at last year. And, you know, with that much wide attacking play coming in, that's a little bit scary. And then I think the central defense against San Jose was very, very bad. And
yeah, that was actually a little bit concerning, I think. Padiani did not have a very good game. I gotta believe that John Kennedy Hurtado is still the preferred, you know, first choice center back. It makes me a little... It does make me wonder a little bit about it, just because there's no reason he shouldn't have been available for that game. And there was a fair amount of speculation that it was basically just a matchup issue where Siggy wanted Padiani to be on Chris Wondolowski, although he didn't really seem to be matched up with him, and that really seemed to be Leo Gonzalez's purview. Anyway, I think that just about does it. Thanks again for joining us. This was Jeremiah O'Shan. I'm always joined by Aaron Campo, and we're going to try to do some more interviews, and hopefully we'll be able to start getting some guests on. And yes, we're working on getting it distributed to the appropriate channels like iTunes and Zune or RSS feeds and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and hopefully we'll see you next week.